Today's episode of the City of Smack podcast on the City of Smack podcast network is brought to you by Momentous. Get your hands on the cleanest and safest supplements on the market. Over the past couple weeks, I've been able to try Momentous as one of the newest additions to my training regimen as I set out to try and break 5 minutes for the mile this summer and then maybe chase a sub-3 marathon this fall. All of their products are NSF certified for sport, which means you can trust and believe that what's on the label matches up with what's in the package. That's an awesome peace of mind to have. Momentous works with elite athletes in running, cycling, rock climbing, skiing, and even NFL football players. At the same time, they're also delivering results when it comes to working with recreational runners and people like me that just want to get the best out of themselves. So I've been using their strength and recovery protein shake after workouts. I'm someone who initially thought that you can get lost in what's proper fueling, you know, how much I should be taking. Momentous has made it super easy. All you have to do is go onto their site, they outline all of their ingredients, and you can also learn what some of the professional athletes are also doing. Like, for example, I learned that Emma Bates drops Momentous collagen into her coffee and that she takes Momentous's Brain Drive before workouts. Try it for yourself. City of Smack podcast listeners will generously receive 20% off their first order of Momentous by using the promo code CITIUS at checkout. Visit livemomentous.com and use the code CITIUS at checkout for 20% off of plant protein, whey protein, sleep formula, brain formula, whatever. Live it, get it, prove it, livemomentous.com.
All right, we are live here at the Loop running store in downtown Austin, the only local running shop down here. You got to support local businesses in these times, Kyle.
Well, something that's been so cool in general right now is the support that I feel like the general running community is throwing behind the elite side of the sport. And so having running stores supporting events like this is obviously great because it helps us put on good track meets. And we saw that, obviously. I think Ben Blankenship can be the godfather of the trend of the grassroots support for naming races after patrons of the sport.
No, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, especially even with this race that we've got, the Trials of Miles Texas Qualifier starts at 7 p.m. Eastern Central Time. I keep getting them confused because I have no idea where I am.
They're so similar.
You can watch it for free on the City of Smack YouTube channel. And the reason that it's going to be free is just thanks to the generous donations of many sponsors, donors that have stepped up in the last like couple weeks to really make it happen. And so it's finally here. I'm excited for these races. What are you looking forward to the most?
Yeah, well, before we get into that, I just want to touch on this more. And we're going to have plenty of time to talk about this over the next couple of nights. But I think that we're sort of hitting this very monumental moment in track history, because I think that what's happening is people are fed up with the powers that be at times, expecting, you know, things to go as they hope they are, and they're just taking it into their own hands. And we're just seeing like the people rise up. It's like we're deciding which stocks go up.
I never thought you would draw that comparison.
What do you mean?
No, it's just like it's so apt for the times.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, so the way the meet is broken down, Friday night we're going to try and see as many people, you know, make this dream of qualifying for the trials come true. Let's make this about you again. What was it like qualified for the trials the first time?
I think that the first time that you qualify for the trials, it's special because it's immediately denotes you as a standout elite runner. And I think that it's very different from the marathon trials in a way on the track, because it's a little bit more exclusive. It's very difficult to make some of these fields that are very, mm-hmm. very small. And the times, when you look at what the standards are, they're generally to get in. If you look back a few generations, maybe even just a couple generations, the times just to get in, that barrier would have made you a potential contender to make the teams.
Yeah.
And how quickly that's changed.
Yeah, and it's interesting, especially I look to on Friday night, the event to definitely watch, I would probably say, is going to be the women's 10K, because the women's 10K is one of those things. We're coming off the Olympic trials in the marathon where it was 500 plus women, twice the size of what it was 4 years before that. And now when you expect a field, USATF probably expected a field of like 24, 28 women. We're, I think, already past that in the number of people who have already hit the time. So now how many more people are going to be added to sort of like that list this upcoming weekend? I mean, two 10K heats at the trials? I mean, logistically, schedulally, it's going to be a lot to juggle for USATF.
Yeah, well, I think that two things come to mind is, first off, like the 10K, there's so few of them in terms of like opportunities that exist. And mm-hmm. So every single time that there is an elite 10K, people have to take advantage of it. It's never going to go slow. Everyone, you know, it's circled on all the calendars because you really only have a couple shots throughout the year to really go after it. And then the other thing is, it's one of those events, and I think the women's steeplechase is very similar, that is getting so much better so quickly. And our idea of what was a great 10K time has quickly mm-hmm. been readjusted. And that's not even to get into the shoe side of things in any way, but just in general, like the trajectory of what the 10th best female in the country is running for a 10K, it's a very, very quick rise right now. And so, I'm not surprised by anything that's happening right now.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to try our best to limit the shoe talk during the
but it's so much fun to talk about.
What else are you looking forward to on that first night? Like, there's some names on the first night of competition that it's like, huh, I haven't heard that name in a while. And it's like, oh, it's good that now, I guess, like, it's the Olympic year, and it's kind of like you have to spring into action because there aren't that many opportunities between now and June. And so when something arises, you got to jump on it. Someone like Boris Berian, I feel like we haven't heard from him for a while. He's in the men's 800. The women's 800 has the top three high school girls who are all knocking on sort of like that 201 range, 202 range to get into the trials and that kind of stuff too. So 800s are going to be pretty thrilling. I think the 1500s, it's like the ones we have on Saturday.
You just like every event.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, we're going to run through every single one practically.
Yeah. Well, I think, first off, when you said like there's some names that you haven't seen in a while, that's kind of the theme for all of track and field.
Yeah.
There's still so many people that we haven't seen race in, a year, and let alone a year and a half if you didn't really go for that last indoor season that things were relatively normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a decent idea of what some people have been up to thanks to the likes of Strava.
Yeah.
And
Instagram.
But that's only as much as people are willing to share. And so this is going to be a coming out party for a lot of people. And to touch on one race in particular, when I look at the women's 800, it is name after name after name. It is a stacked field. And it is the sort of race where the difference now between, making the team and not even making the final, it's a lean, basically.
Yeah, it is. I remember the difference was like, it was like 159, I don't think, got you into the final at the trials in 2016. The running joke that whole entire weekend among the media members was just sort of like, who's your top three? Women's eight, who you got? And it was just so fun because you can ask that question to anyone and everyone's got a totally different answer. And
it's
so,
very much personal bias.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
which is good. That's like why you're rooting for people.
And so, yeah, I think Friday night will be interesting to just see just how, it's the trials are going to be very crowded, I think.
Yeah. And I think I'm looking at this field and just to run through the names.
The Friday night ones or Saturday.
The fast heat.
Okay.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm looking at Charlene Lipsey, Hannah Seagrave, Ajay Wilson, Kendra Chambers, Sierra Brown, Sammy Watson, Kate Grace, Adele Tracy, Kayla Edwards, and Alexa Ephraimson. And the first thing that goes to my mind is like, and I know that we have a few, non-Americans in there, but this is America's opportunity to kind of respond to what's going on in the UK.
Oh yeah. 100%.
And we're developing a rivalry here
on both sides, the men and the
middle distance.
Yeah.
And I you know, I just came up with this on the spot, I swear, but like someone needs to do a US versus UK meet. Very much so. We can call it like
USA versus UK,
the Revolutionary War Part Two or something. I don't know.
The rematch.
Yeah, the rematch. Yeah. We'll base it in colonial Massachusetts.
Well, I don't know. Like, USA versus the world, it usually happens at Penn Relays, but I feel like there's something there that you can kick off something at Hayward Field, possibly.
Well, I think this is, you know, there's a lot of storylines developing, especially as so many of the UK athletes are names that we recognize because they went to college here and train here, and yet they put on a different vest than, you know, the United States. And
everyone's been talking about beef, and it's like among like the US athletes, but it's like, why don't we just go back to the original beef, US versus UK?
Bring it back. Yeah.
We've got so we're streaming this on Clubhouse. We just got Alex Lohr to raise his hand. Let's see what Alex has got
for us. Yeah, fun new interactive podcast idea.
Let's see. Alex has raised his hand. Let's invite him to speak. Hopefully this goes through. Alex, what you got for us?
Oh, man, is this live?
It is live. You're on a podcast that we're recording, and you're on Clubhouse.
It's a lot of layers there. Hey, so I thought it would be interesting to just level set with everyone. You guys touched on, chasing standards, and, like, you asked Merber about, what was the first, like, what was it like the first time to, like, qualify for the trials? And then that led to, hey, trials are super, or might be a little crowded. But I think it'd be interesting for us, like, all to level set on, okay, 2021, what does the Olympic trials look like for the distance events as far as people who have actually hit an Olympic standard? Because I just feel like there's been some confusion on, like, hey, you know, this is the Olympic standard this year, and this will get you through. And then, but the marathon trials, like, actually count, even though they don't have all the, like, standards. So could we, like, level set with everyone, like, hey, you know, this is the Olympic standard to get you into the, like, this is how I guess the trials will look from a, like, an excitement perspective. And, like, because I'm thinking back on, like, you know, 2016 and 2012, right? It was, like, in the 5K and 10K, especially on the women's side.
Oh, some people didn't have the standards. Some people had them. Yep.
Right. So, like, can you guys, like, level set us? Because, like, I'm like, a little confused. Like, what is that going to look like for the trials in the U.S.? Like, when we sit down and watch that final at the U.S. Olympic trials, are the top three going to go? Are we going to be in this shitty limbo anticlimactic moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Kyle. What do you think?
So, you know, the standards to make the Olympics straight up are difficult. And, you know, when you look at the men's 1500, it's 335.0. The women's 800 is 159.5. Like, these are elite times. But I think that some of the IAAF changes and the introduction of the ranking system.
I can't explain the ranking system to you even now.
Yeah, so I'm not going to nail it completely, but basically the idea is that every single race that you do gets a certain point value attributed to it based off of how fast it is on the standards table, and then also how competitive of a meet was it. And so, you know, you think of a Diamond League, and that's considered like an A race. It's as competitive as it may be. Whereas the Trials of Miles meet is probably, you know, D or whatever the lowest is, because it's not a proven meet. I think prize money has a large influence in it and, like, how established these meets are. And so that affects the weighting, the way things are weighted. But I think the thing to know that's important is that it seems like it's going to actually be way easier, because the Olympic trials is so heavily weighted that if you finish in the top three, and assuming that you've had a relatively normal season leading up and you've put up a couple decent performances, you should have enough points and be ranked high enough. I want to say it's top 48, but I think they take out athletes
in other events and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, in other event and, like, non-declared. And so it would appear that it won't be the same issue or at least it wouldn't be as serious of an issue, and you would need a really big upset for someone to finish in the top three and to not qualify.
Yeah, so I mean, like, track, as if it wasn't already tough to follow, just, you know, does this all the time.
Yeah, but I would almost argue that it's not worth paying attention to the points.
Yeah, I think the top three that you'll see in Eugene cross the finish line should have the standard and enough to go. And I don't think there's the opportunity to chase this time around like there have been in the past. But at the same time, like, it's some of the most recent cases. I think Josh Thompson finished third at USA's in 2019 in the 1500, didn't have the standard to go to Worlds. And so I think Blankenship ended up going, and he was fourth.
Well, in the 5K, that was a real mess as well.
So it still happens, but I think it should be clear by.
I think things have continued to improve. And also, the athletes and the coaches are very cognizant of their rankings. I think from a fan perspective, it's probably overly complicated and unnecessary. But I think, you know, as opposed to there being just a few people with the standard and it's wherever they finish, it should hopefully make more sense. But of course, if someone is the last person to the trials and only had one good performance and then by some miracle finish, I'm thinking, I guess, Christian Smith, 2008, 800, he might have not had enough points. But for the most part, I think 99% of the races should hopefully work out.
Yeah. Great question, Alex.
Really put us on the spot.
All right, who else we got? If you've got a question for us in the clubhouse, you can raise your hand and we'll call on you. We actually got a text as we're recording this. Text from Manuel Mitchell, who says, you can run 46 flat in Europe and get more points than you were if you run 44 point at the U.S. Olympic trials against the top eight times in the world. So the system is a little flawed sometimes.
Yeah, it definitely rewards traveling to some of the meets that are outside of the United States. And oftentimes some of the more remote meets that are less competitive will be more valuable because the IAAF spreads those different world challenges out. And so you have to be a little selective, which is probably a bit more challenging given COVID.
Yeah. That's why you can't pull the Eric Sawinski and just race every single weekend in a different country and rack up points everywhere.
What a beautiful story.
All right, so Friday, we kind of touched on Friday. Saturday is going to be the faster of the 2 days. Again, we're going to have pacers for the race. And then also on top of that, there's going to be the light pacing system on the inside rail. So keep an eye out for that as well to try and guide these people to fast times. So should we just run through each one of these races super quick? We'll go women's 1500. Oh, Alex Lohr has another one for us.
He's still here.
And Alex is back.
You can turn me down. Hey, I want to know, okay, new meet like this, right? And in a location we're not familiar with. Are you guys familiar with how the light rail system is working? Like, tell me about that setup. Tell me, like, what is this company? Is it aligned to the timing, you know, the timing official aligned?
Oh, I let.
What does that setup look like?
I've let the Trials and Miles guys handle all of that. We'll have the information during the broadcast. I haven't looked into it. I've just been typing away at 50 pages worth of research into every single competitor.
But yeah, I think the light system can be applied to any track. External thing that they bring in, and then for each race, the time is set. And I almost look at it more as a way for the rabbits to be able to relax and do their job as opposed to the athletes. From what I've heard, you know, for athletes who've raced with the light system, they're not really paying attention to it. Like, maybe occasionally they're aware of it, but it's not necessarily the main focus. It's more, I would say, in the beginning of the race.
Yeah. There's a guy gracious enough who's traveling all the way here to build it out and make it happen. So I'm pretty excited for it. We'll see how it works. All right. Back to the fields. Women's 1500. We've got Colleen Quigley, Helen, you're going to do
Schlafenhofen.
You've got it.
I think I know like very German whenever I say it.
Gabriella Stafford, Corey McGee, Shannon Osika, Jenna Westaway, Sarah Vaughn, and Sinclair Johnson. I mean, this the fact that
and Nikki and Corey.
No, I said
oh,
them.
You got
them. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Gabrielle Stafford with the 356 is the fastest PR of the field. So I think, you know, the way that she showed out at the Prickly Pear Invitational, I mean, kind of makes her the clear favorite here.
Yeah, I would say so. And she's been consistently just showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that move to Jerry's group, I think a lot of people question how will you respond to that fall-based training when you first come in. And in, after watching her race at Prickly Pear, it seems like she just did very well. I think a lot of people often say, like, the second year in Jerry's group is, you know.
You have this theory, right, that you really want to study.
I've thought about it, but I'm too lazy to look into it. But I think, like, the second year, the third year are really the big jumps once mm-hmm. you have some, you know, some ability to handle the mileage a little bit better. But she's obviously a seasoned vet. She's not straight out of college like a lot of Jerry athletes would maybe be when joining, so she's adapted really well.
Who else are you looking out for in this race?
I think, you know, I'm going to be looking at Colleen Quigley's uniform and shoes. Maybe we get a little hint of what her new group is, but I think that she's just, you know, obviously someone who everyone's going to have eyes on, and just seeing how she's doing handling the adjustments. And she's someone who is very competitive and always takes races to the line pretty regularly. And so she's looking probably for some redemption here on the Prickly Pear.
Men's 1500 got a couple scratches. We teased it at the very beginning of the month.
Yeah,
it
was... okay. Can we talk about this
yes,
story?
Go for
so
it.
A couple months ago, I wasn't involved in any way of putting these fields together. I just decided to show up and start talking about the races. But I was on these emails, and I think a couple months ago, you guys were very much discussing who should be in what heat, look at these fields, should we announce now? And as a seasoned meet director and athlete myself, I had a lot of confidence in the fact, and I sent the email that I think no one responded to, that basically these fields are going to change constantly. And
yeah.
As you get closer to the race, especially in a COVID world, that things are going to look very, very different 2 months before and then on race day. And then even still, while we're waiting for all these COVID tests to come in to make sure the athletes are eligible to race.
There could be last-minute scratches, yeah.
There could be last-minute scratches. There's been weather,
mm-hmm.
you know. So
travel delays, yeah.
Exactly. And so...
oh, don't even get me thinking of how that's going to be at the trials. Imagine someone tests positive in between semis and finals. Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
What a world. And so we are... I think very, very excited still about this field. But
yeah.
I know that a couple months ago that there was talk of having two.
It was Centro. It was Brazier, Jaeger. Those were the three big guys on the graphic, and they scratched. But Nick Willis is still on the graphic, and Nick Willis is in this race.
I told you to put Johnny in the graphic. So I'm going to say the one thing that I'm really, really excited for, and maybe, you know, this is different than when you think, it's Charlie Hunter.
Coming off the mile.
Because... it's one thing to, we want to know what happened in Arkansas. Like, it was incredible. Those guys ran so well from Oregon. And we were talking about this on our run today, in which I dropped you.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that we had discussed was essentially that times don't mean as much as they used to.
Save it for the broadcast, Kyle.
But it's about beating people. And we know that those Oregon guys are fit. Obviously, and Charlie ran a hell of a mile and an unbelievable 800 the following day.
Mm-hmm.
But now this is kind of our first opportunity where we're seeing what that Oregon contingency is bringing to, you know, racing other fields.
Yeah, so I'm particularly excited about seeing him. Justin Knight looked great in the 2 mile at Ocean Breeze.
Very strong, closed really well, which is nothing new for him. And so I think that was his first race in almost a year.
Since the Millrose Games, the
and
previous
so
year, yeah.
The fact that he was able to come out so strong and now with that under his belt, not a bad rust buster. You know, he's shown time and time again that he can do the middle distance events.
We saw him on the shakeout, on the run.
He looked amazing. And then there's Josh Thompson.
Yeah. Who you'll get more into it. I'll give you the opportunity to really make your case as to why you think he is America's best miler or 1500 guy.
Well, I just think I've said he's the most underrated despite consistently being up there, being a U.S. champion himself and being on a hell of a winning streak. But I just think that he's a guy, and, you know, to get into the beef, although I think this beef was just for fun, but, you know, because he's such a nice guy, he's often forgotten about, or maybe doesn't get as much fanfare as he should because he wins.
Yeah, and he's a dad, and so he's got the dad strength theory that David Melly likes to float around. Let's move on to the women's 800. You touched on this field already before. Originally, there was another scratch from the previously announced field, included Raven Rogers. She's the only one, I think, who is no longer in it. That was supposed to be a rematch between her and Ajay Wilson, but still, I mean, like, there's a ton of sub-two women in here. We get to see pretty much, I think, two-thirds of the U.S. team that competed in Doha. Charlene Lipsey, someone who hasn't raced in a while, since 2018, I think. And so I'm very curious to see what shape she's in.
And I believe she's still with Derek Thompson, correct? And so then, you know, obviously, anytime Ajay races, it's exciting. And the other individual from that group, my former teammate, is Sierra Brown. And she's someone who we've seen, you know, take plenty of races right to the line. She's won plenty. She takes Ajay. She's always on the outside of Ajay's shoulder. And, you know, I think that now that they're training together, she probably has gotten even more used to following her around the track. And it's all about just getting around in the last 50 meters. And then finally, the individual that I'm really excited about is Kate Grace.
Yeah, she had a little bit of a scare a couple days ago. I think she thought that she broke her foot. She posted on Instagram, and so I thought she was going to scratch, but she's in it, and she's new training group. We'll see how it translates.
Yeah, and I think that was probably, and I'm completely projecting here, I have no idea if this is true, but I'd imagine that she wanted to do some more 800s, and you know, she obviously demonstrated just how strong she is during her time with Jerry, but the 800 is where she started, like all the way back at Yale. And
it's where she made an Olympic team.
And so she, you know, that's kind of her bread and butter, and she has a lot of history in the event. And I think that joining Joe's group immediately puts her in a situation where she's surrounding herself with some more speedy individuals, probably some people who can take 200s with her at the end of practice, whereas, you know, instead of fighting in the strength workouts with some marathoners.
Yeah. So women's 800, look out for that one. Men's 800. This one was supposed to feature Bryce Hopple. He had to scratch after his American record at Ocean Breeze a little bit. It wasn't anything serious, like injury-wise or anything like that. Just kind of, that was a really hard effort. And so you got to take a little bit of a break after that. So in that one, we've got Isaiah Harris. There's some beef in this one, if you want to talk beef.
I didn't know we had beef.
It's Drew Piazza and Isaiah Harris.
Tell me about the beef.
Drew Piazza commented on the field that we posted on Instagram. He said, Isaiah Harris is a big weenie.
And oh my God.
In where I'm from, those are fighting words. And so
I had no idea so much was on the line.
And so then Isaiah Harris commented back, this man races in a t-shirt. And that's, I mean, next level. Then he posted that he was doing strides today here in Texas on Instagram. And then Drew Piazza reposted it and said, if mediocrity had an Instagram account, this is what it would look like.
Oh my God. So, you know, I think Isaiah, who I have spent plenty of time with before, you know, we did a training camp together last year in Arizona. And so I've spent my fair share of time with Isaiah. He's a very good sleeper.
Out of 800U.
Yeah. And he, I think, is probably someone that we forget about a lot. And he's proven himself as someone who can negative split and close races very, very hard. And sometimes it looks like he's tying up, and it seems like the more he ties up, the faster he goes. And I think that the challenge now is, in the last couple of years, it seems like Donovan and Bryce have really kicked things up, and races are going faster. And we know Isaiah can run great tactical races. And the challenge now is, can he run those 142s and 143s that it's going to take in order to make the teams if it goes out hard.
Yeah, Hopple said his prediction was it's going to be 145 to get to the final, and then from there it's going to, he thinks, he and Donovan, the way he envisions it is could be American record at the trials. But I was like, you don't want to, you know, just peak too early for the summer. The Tokyo mark to hit is 145.20. Isaiah's PR is 144.42 from the 2018 Paris Diamond League. So, you know, I could see him getting, you know, pretty close to not getting that Tokyo mark.
Yeah, I mean, in 2018, I believe he was still in college.
Yeah, he raced in the Penn State uniform, yeah.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, Isaiah is probably someone who over the last few years has developed a lot of maturity as a runner, and I feel like we haven't fully been able to see it. I know he's been banged up here and there and just hasn't been as consistently racing mm-hmm. as maybe he would have hoped, but we know that the talent is there. We've seen it, and that's the thing that I'm looking for now. I would expect him to be at the very, very front of this race.
And now I know it's February and, you know, there haven't been too many outdoor races, but one of the things I'm most excited about, because I wrote it down in all of these notes, is the world leading times. The world leading time right now is like 147 from someone out in Australia. And so I'm ready to run with the headline the next day.
As an outdoor race?
As an outdoor race.
We're differentiating the indoor and outdoor.
Yeah. So we're going to, I think the Texas qualifier is going to walk away with many world leading times in for the outdoor
That's
events.
That's huge.
And so it's going to be, you know, the people are already saying that it's going to be it's the Monaco of the U.S.
Okay. It was raining today. And I think, you know, when we showed up, we were saying that, like, great 10K weather. I don't know about the 800 yet, but things have been known to change here quickly.
We've got four more races to run through. 5K. This one, the Tokyo target is 13:13. I had a couple scratches in this one as well, mainly because, I mean, there's meets happening on the West Coast as well the weekend before and the weekend after. So, you know, people can get selective with their races as well. But still, really strong field. Who are you looking out for in this one?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Ryan Hill is someone whose name stands out on this list. He did run a 3K a week or two ago in Arizona, but it was a slow race.
Tactical one, yeah.
Tactical, supposedly really windy, bad weather, but he did win and he beat some really good guys in the process. Then the name that personally two names actually that I'm really looking at as guys who we're seeing if they can reach that next level is Mason Furlick, who has, you know, consistently shown that he can do it all. Like mm-hmm. he, you know, he took Paul Chelimo down in a cross country race earlier this year. He has the steeplechase behind him. He
paced the marathon project for 15 miles.
Yeah, he beat Nick Willis in a mile in Florida earlier in the year. And so I think the 5K is potentially Mason's sweet spot. And I would think that he's someone who is probably eyeing that standard. And then the other person that I just think is consistently underrated is Willie Fink.
Yeah, you stole him from me. I have a couple notes on him.
Yeah, well, did you note that he like definitely tripped me up a lot at the Cleveland mile no, a few years
the
ago?
Guardian
the Guardian mile? Yeah, no. And then he kicked my ass. So Willie is a very good racer. He looked unbelievable last indoor season before things shut down, running really, really well at BU.
Yeah.
You have all the notes. I'm just going off memory. I told you I was going to do this off natural talent.
13:17, 15 indoors, which is faster than his outdoor PR of 13:31. There's a couple people who have that in that case.
Yeah. And then Willie won last weekend at the JDL Fast Track in the mile.
Rocking a sweet mustache.
Looking very, very elite. And so he's someone who I think we just forget about because he never, like, he doesn't have a flashy background. He's just a guy who's slowly gotten better and better. And as he's gotten better, the field has narrowed. And all of a sudden, Willie Fink's like a guy you have to watch out for. And it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. The U.S. is pretty stacked in 5K guys named Willie.
And then I'd be remiss not to mention Eric Avila, mainly because I think he would text me immediately after hearing this podcast that I didn't mention him.
Yeah, well, he popped a really fast 5K last December, and like he's going to do it in a speed suit. If you listen to Run Your Mouth, he explains how he got to rocking speed suits. Morgan McDonald, I mean, you are his YouTube number one fan. As soon as the merch drop happens, you're in it.
Is he in this men's 5K?
Oh, he might have scratched, but I have him in my notes.
Okay, because he's not in my notes.
Oh, damn.
But, man, hell of a YouTube channel.
Hell of a YouTube channel. Women's 5K. Tokyo target is 15:10. The world leading time right now is 16:03 out in Australia. That one's going down for sure.
I have a feeling that one will go down.
This one has to be billed as Eleanor Puryear versus Emma Coburn part two.
Yeah, and you know what? Obviously, Emma ran an unbelievable race, breaking the American record, and it's tough when you break the American record, but someone else broke it first.
Yeah.
And I believe this is Emma's 5K debut.
Yeah, which is crazy to think. Like, I didn't realize that, like, Wetmore never ran her in a 5K while she was in college.
I guess that's, like, a testament to Wetmore not, you know, chasing points.
Yeah.
That's an argument of why you go to distance schools. and so I think Emma's just really, really strong. I mean, she's dropped me on long runs before. Like, she can do a 5K. I have a lot of confidence in that. And, you know, Ellie now, like, we've seen what she's capable of. We know she's fit. And I think that we're going to see a sub 15 if the conditions are right.
I think they've requested for an additional pacer. Like, yes, the Tokyo target of 15:10, but I think Joe might have requested that they move things a little bit quicker.
I wonder what sort of 5K shape Joe is in.
That's a good question. Another person, though, to watch, we can't overlook Rachel Snyder.
I was going to say Rachel next.
She just snagged the 12K in like an hour at Camel City.
It's kind of, I think, like, she owes that meet, or that beat owes her so much money. Rachel was the person that I was going to point out as being the one who, the sleeper. And she's going to, I'm sure, not back down from any pace that anyone goes out in. And she has a hell of a final 100. And so she's definitely someone that I'm looking at. But back to this thing that's not important at all. I was thinking how fun it would be to have a graph between Emma and Joe's fitness and, like, seeing where they intersect and who's in better shape at different points in time.
I like that.
Yeah.
We'll have Scott Olberding put it together.
Put the Excel spreadsheet together. Mark it up in Tableau.
Now let's do women's 10K. Women's 10K might be the one that ruins our shot of possibly going for... Actually, no. I think we have a good shot of getting the world lead in this one. Elise Cranny set the bar kind of high with her 30-47 just last weekend. But this one's got Coco.
A late entry, but
very late entry. At first, it was going to be like Sarah Hall versus Keira D'Amato. Sarah Hall had to scratch. Now Keira D'Amato's new Nike sponsorship, rocking that, is going to. I think Coco is going to rip this one. I think
so. Coco's like,
which is her 10K debut.
Coco's standard, just so you know, like, her standard tempo is basically 5 flat pace. Like, she just goes on the track and runs 5 flat pace for 5 miles.
You've seen this in person?
I'm maybe not supposed to say things like that. But she does insane things. And so you extrapolate that. That's a 31:07, you know. And so
she's run under 14:30 for the 5K.
Who knows?
3 times.
So I see this as a really great opportunity for Keira D'Amato, because Coco's not afraid to push it. And Keira's in great shape, and we know that. And we know that because I don't know if you saw her Strava. She's a great Strava follow, and I encourage everyone to do that. But yesterday, as like her tune-up workout, I'm just going to read this out loud. I have it in front of me because I couldn't believe. I was like, oh, she must have scratched the race. Like, she's not going. But for all we know, she's coming. She did a 1K in 2:59, a 1K in 2:55, a 2K in 6:04, another mile in 4:44, and then an 800 in 2:17.
What?
I think if I did that, like, the last year, like, I would be shot. Like, my race, that would take so much out of me. But this is, like, seemingly her tune-up race before absolutely crushing a 10K.
Yeah. I think those will be your top two. But then from there on, again, someone like Laura Thwaite, who finished fifth at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials, getting back on the track is also very interesting. Final race of the night will be the men's 10K. In this one, the field, I would say, is headline Rory Linkletter, Reed Fisher, I think might be the top two guys in this one.
Yeah. You know, I think that the thing that I'm looking at most is probably Sam Chalinga. just because I'm so interested and fascinated by his return and his comeback, and we know what sort of wheels and talent he has.
Right.
And so if he's in shape or even close to back to what he was doing
years
ago, then I think he kind of runs away with it. But I think for a lot of these guys, it's all about getting that 10K Olympic trials standard.
Yeah, it could come as a result of chasing the much faster pace. So that's the Trials and Miles Texas qualifier live on the Sidious Mag YouTube channel.
We definitely forgot to mention someone who's so good and is going to win.
And
we're going to feel very silly now. And that's part of being an analyst, I suppose. Stephen A. Smith makes this mistake all the time.
Well, the other thing, too, is just like it's on Clubhouse. It's going to go away. But, I mean, there's going to be a podcast that'll be released with this. But then, you know, we've got almost 3 hours of a broadcast to kill, and I've got 50 pages of notes that I can read off of. So this is going
to
be fun.
I have a lot of things to say.
I'm pumped. All right. Well, hope you guys tune in to the live stream on YouTube. Again, it should start around 6:30 Central Time, where Kyle and I will just banter for a bit, maybe show a couple videos off, and then get right into the broadcast. If the weather holds up, there's a rumor we might be trying drones. I don't know. Let's see.
Drone Racing League. Also, huge thank you to The Loop for allowing us to come down, check out their store, and record a podcast here. Really beautiful space. Really cool stuff going on here. It's unbelievable running community in Austin.
Check out their merch. It's awesome. It's flying off the shelves here.
One of the best cotton tees you'll ever feel against your smooth baby skin.
Yeah.
But it's, I think that we're very, very fortunate to be able to come to Austin. I know a week ago that there was, you know, a lot of doubts and some very serious things were happening here. And you have been here all week and you said,
yeah, the weather's gotten better.
Rebounding strong.
Yeah. We're going to include all the links to, you know, where you can donate to the Austin Mutual Aid and that kind of stuff during the broadcast. So, pretty excited for it, but yeah, it feels good to be back in Austin.
Yeah. Every opportunity to race right now is also very much appreciated. And so, we're excited to be able to be out there and help bring it to you guys.